Hey everyone, welcome to Myopia Movies. This week we wind up our Nora Ephron month and a romantic month and everything with probably her most popular written movie, When Harry Met Sally. Now, unlike other movies that we've done of hers, she did not both write and direct it, but she did write this one, and it has a lot of her stable of actors, including Meg Ryan. This is a kind of lighthearted comedy with some tropes that are used. In fact, appropriately enough, most recently, if you have not been watching the HBO Max show Harley Quinn, they do the cutaway to other couples thing, just like When Harry Met Sally there, which was a pleasant surprise. Anyway, we appreciate you. And don't worry. Don't worry, we're continuing on theme with next week, Billy Crystal and Bruno Kirby, as we talk about another Academy Award-winning movie starring Jack Palance, who won for Best Supporting, City Slickers. Thanks, everyone.
Welcome to Myopia Movies. This week, we end our Nora Ephron month and transition a little bit into March by talking about When Harry Met Sally from 1989, a rom-com question mark, starring some of your favorites, your Meg Ryans, your Billy Crystals, your Bruno Kirbys, and the late and great Carrie Fisher. I'm your host, Nick Hoffman, Riffer on Cineprov, and stuck here on a TV screen. And on panel we have Matt.
Yep, that's me, Matthew W. Quinn.
And our guest host, the great Nora Trinette.
Oh, thank you, thank you. Hi, how's it going?
We're here to talk about When Harry Met Sally. I imagine most of you know it from the scene where she has an orgasm in a Greek in a Greek diner. Mm-hmm. But this might be the best Nora Ephron movie we've done so far, and that's why it's kind of the end. It's the final punch at the end of this wonderful month we've had. And if I believe my notes correctly, Nora, this is one of your favorites. This is one you've seen a million times.
No, I say that a lot. No, I was actually thinking that. I say, oh, this is one of my favorites. But no, for real, it is one of my favorite movies because it doesn't. It's not like you questioned it at first. You said rom-com, quite like in quotations, because like it's a movie that just felt natural because it didn't start off like something tragic. Like at the beginning of, I think was it Sleepless in Seattle? There's a funeral scene. You know, this started off very quaint, just two people just chilling, and it starts off with at the beginning with old folks just telling them how they met, and it just gradually, like, you became friends with these people, you got to know them, and then you end up falling in love with them. That was like, I like that movie because you went on an adventure and, you know, you actually had emotions for these people.
I agree, it's a very natural progression of, I don't want to say a non-traditional romantic relationship, but it's one where people were friends first, they met, it was a long-term relationship, and then it turns out that they were people who cared for each other. It's very interesting, because, you know, again, so often in these rom-coms, I mean, we just left, you know, the Chris Mahana Kwanzaa Dawn season, and so many of them are like, oh, my family wants me to be there, and I'm going to be the only single one. Oh, if only I could meet a man ice skating. Oh, hooray, I've met a man ice skating. And that meet cute ends up with a relationship. You know, it's whatever that, I mean, that Netflix cult movie, The Christmas Prince is about. You know, it's a lot of those, like, while you were sleeping, you're just like, oh my goodness, if we could just meet this one time, it would be perfect.
It's like a Lifetime movie.
Right, which is a genre all of its own. And luckily, we're talking about a movie before there were Lifetime movies, really. Mm-hmm. And so this is fleshed out. They give real actors a chance to really shine.
If this was a Lifetime movie, Harry would be a serial killer.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, yeah. He won't leave me alone.
I'm running into him.
If you actually switch up the music of this movie, it is kind of horror-ish because, what was it, Jordan Peele said the difference between comedy and horror is music?
The soundtrack, yeah.
100% true. But yeah, put a little creepy violin when he's creeping, you know, I guess what, in the car, basically where the movie begins, and gradually at the various places, you know, and the awkward silences they have. Yeah.
You know, do the Psycho soundtrack, the do 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 dun 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 dun, dun, dun. Like that's what it is. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
So unlike most of the movies we've done this month, while it is written by Nora Ephron, it's actually directed by Rob Reiner. This is not the first Rob Reiner movie we've done, but his timing is much more comedic. Like, I think this is probably the funniest movie of the Nora Ephron month we've done so far. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, perhaps it's the tightest, the funniest. I don't know. He also directed, of course, previous episodes, the Princess Bride. He directed a lot of my favorites as well. And definitely future episodes. North, which Roger Ebert said was the worst movie he'd ever seen. In fact, his review, I hated this movie, comes from his review of North. But he also directed Stand By Me, Misery, A Few Good Men. And literally, The Princess Bride was the movie he directed right before this. So he's one of the best. And in fact, his first full-length movie was This Is Spinal Tap, one of the greatest comedies of all time. This movie is incredibly tight on the comedy. But I will throw this to Matt here. I was following your live tweets as you were watching it. So what do you think of this movie?
I thought it was good. Credit where it's due, Harry has a character arc. Because if you see my live tweets, I just rant about how much of a lout he is. But when he goes to Sally when she's crying, he was not trying to take advantage of her. He was trying to comfort her. And then when things start to go haywire, it's not because he's a dick. It's because he's not putting the words out right. And wonder how many times have I made a hash of things trying to say something profound. Does Sally have an arc, or she just get less insecure?
I mean, I guess that's kind of, I would say, I mean, the interesting part in some way. I mean, her arc is similar. I mean, in some ways, they have almost it's a sitcom relationship, right?
Yeah. Like,
it's a will they, won't they the whole time. There's a lot of kind of back and forth. There's charm. I mean, this comes out in 89. Yeah. I mean, in some ways, to me, it kind of informed Seinfeld in a lot of ways, because like
with
the
Billy.
Main heroine and or the main like female lead and the main male lead had a past. They don't really have a past. They're never going to hook up. Like, it's the kind of can men and women be friends, which is kind of the thesis of this. Hmm. And the answer is, for the most part, kind of yeah, but also no, but also that's kind of what a good relationship is.
Yes, unless they have absolutely insane amounts of chemistry for each other, which these two do. Like, I remember pecan pie, pecan pie. That is a really well done scene.
Describe it, Pat. We're here.
Pecan pie?
Well,
I'll keep doing this until I give your until your head explodes from the pitch.
Pecan pie. No,
because I thought he was trying to be French.
I thought it was more of like an Italian or a Greek Italian.
Italian. What happens watching a movie a month before the podcast? You have to go look up your Twitter feed to see what you said.
Mm. But no, I agree in all the sense. But the one thing I will say that's it's the chemistry, especially with, and I give credit to the actors and how well they play off each other. Like they were basically in every scene from beginning to end with each other, essentially, occasionally here and there. I mean, Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan didn't even see each other in Sleep in Seattle to the very end. And what, I didn't feel anything. It's just like that gust of just like sense of love. But no, like I said earlier, like you felt every emotion they were feeling in a sense, you know, in various parties when they had a romantic connection or seems like they had a romantic connection to each other, they would get jealous of the partners along and you would get jealous too. But then you would feel like, I don't know. Okay. It's like that scene that bear with me here.
I'm waiting.
I'm going really left on this.
Okay.
It's like that scene from American History X when they're playing basketball and the music makes you feel like, oh my God, I'm rooting for the Nazis. But you're not, but the music is. Like, it's that level, and it happens with the movie too. It makes you feel their emotions of like, of jealousy, of just like on awe and things like that. And you actually genuinely feeling it with the emotions of these two people. And when they finally like, you know, fuck, I was confused, but at the same time, I wanted them to do it, but I was still torn.
Well, Harry was confused because he's like, after his divorce, he's like loving and leaving every woman in New York. And then he and Sally get it on, and he's just sitting there like, oh no, I don't want to toss her and I'm done. Like, I've lived on everyone else.
Yeah. Which I didn't pick up on until he actually explained it all. Like, his reasoning why he acted that way. I was there with Sally, confused, and, you know, like, what the fuck? You know, we finally did it. But yeah.
Very good. I'm with you there. We'll walk through this plot, but the plot is almost harder to describe than it's worth in some ways, right?
It takes place over 12 years, I think.
Right. And but like, that's why in some ways I disagree with what you were saying, Matt. I don't think that they're a perfect couple at first. It evolves over time.
Oh yeah, right? Like, at first he is such a prick.
Yeah, but I don't think that's the thrust of it, right?
Let me play devil's advocate. Think about how you were first out of college. I had such a big head, and I thought I was the shit, you know. And that's kind of like that's the kind of swag that he has throughout the thing. Like he you know, he can say anything he wants, do whatever he wants, and not feel and like essentially have that be kind of almost that immaturity of knowing what emotions is, and rather, you know, mix up emotions and a logic, you know, in any situation that you're in.
That's right. And I think that's kind of the point. Like, they weren't a good relationship at first, but both of them changed over time, because I don't think he was the only one that was married. I think she was married too.
She was in a long-term relationship with a guy who didn't want kids, and that's when it ended.
Right. And so we have this situation where they have a lot of relationships, and they both have, like, and they both change over time. It's that kind of a thing. Relationships evolve. They should evolve. God, what was her name? There's someone I'm trying to think of.
Helen, his first wife?
No. Go ahead with the plot.
Okay, so they're both leaving University of Chicago. I think she's driving him to New York, where she's going to be a journalist, he's going to be a lawyer, and he's dating one of her friends. And the first thing is, he gets in his car and shoves his butt in her face and then starts talking about sex and wondering, okay, did she just pick up a serial killer?
Well, I mean, she's offering to drive her friend's boyfriend. Right. And it's, you know, it's a college relationship. They're very physical. Right. And Sally, who's single at the time, is uncomfortable with it. And like, the whole thing is that they both are going to school. They're going to, I think, University of Chicago, but it's in Chicago one way or another. And they're traveling to New York. He lives in New York and she's trying to get a job in New York, if I recall. And the whole like kind of thrust of it is she offered to do this because he's a friend of her best friend or whatever.
It's okay, and they didn't know either in the movie.
Yeah. I mean, it's very vague.
She's dating her close friend because she gets mad when she thinks he makes a pass at her.
And that's how they leave. And this is where we get our first of like 8 diner scenes. But he says it's impossible for men and women to just be friends because the whole sex part gets in the way. Which is, again, the thesis. And it's funny because the whole point of the movie is it's wrong, but it takes them both to change past that, because to him, as Matt said earlier, the point of a relationship is sex, because he doesn't care about these women. But since he cares about Sally, he's going to end up in a relationship with her. The point is that sex is not the onus of the relationship. But again, that's because this is a well-made movie. And the person I was trying to think of earlier was a woman who died in 2020. She's an essayist named Joan Didion. And she said, the thing about marriage that people don't understand is I haven't been married to the same man for 45 years. I've been married to the same man four times for 10 years at a time. Because relationships evolve, relationships change. And that's what the point she was making, which is, I think, what Nora Ephron's point is in this, and Rob Reiner, the director's point is in this.
You know, this makes me think of my favorite quote by Whoopi Goldberg about marriage.
Mm-hmm.
She says, and I quote, "I don't want anybody in my house," end quote. And that same energy is the same energy, I believe, the person you quoted did about love, but in the opposite parallel way.
That's funny.
Yeah.
That's funny. throughout this, we should mention, there's something that I noticed in Matt's tweets he hated, which is the fact that interspersed throughout the whole thing are old couples talking.
Yeah, that makes you hold on to love.
Yeah, so Matt, I mean, what did you think about that?
If they had to have it, ending it with Harry and Sally makes it work, but the movie did not really need it.
I mean, I think it showed the different types of love and how they can essentially grow and fall into. You know what I mean? You have there was a couple that was basically always missing each other. He was a doctor, one worked on the fifth, one worked on the fourth. They were born like a week from each other. They were like neighbors and stuff. And then you had another one where they were high school sweethearts and they left after, they broke up after their parents had moved after high school. And then like 45 later, they met each other. You know, so that gives you the will they, won't they more emphasis a little more. Yeah, I guess it's a little, yeah. What tied it together was when Harry and Sally told about them. But I kind of enjoyed that, you know. And a lot of TV shows and movies copy that. Yeah. You know, Ted Lasso recently did that for one of their episodes, you know. So.
Well, and it's the confessional for The Office or Parks and Rec, right? Right. And I mean, what it does very functionally is it hides the seams between the huge jumps in time.
Good point.
That was the first talking head of the movies.
That's right.
Oh, okay.
And so like they talk and they distract us from scene breaks, and then we jump ahead 4 years or 3 years or whatever. Because remember, we have it, and I believe the first time it happens is we have a parallel scene, right? So when Harry met Sally. She was going to drive him, you know, from Chicago to New York, and there's like, he's hitting on her, she doesn't like it, right? Then they run into each other at an airport where she's making out with someone he works with. While they're making out, you know, Harry's like, "Look, it was good to see you. I got to run to my flight." And then Sally has a very, you know, kind of romantic conversation with this other very tall blonde man. And, you know, she ends up sitting next to him on the airplane where they have a, you know, conversation now as young professionals. And that transition happens when they go through the airport. And so we have two completely parallel scenes followed by, you know, this old Jewish couple with Judge Judy and a man in a suit, right, talking to each other about how they met and how he had to murder that, like, the other asshole who was trying to date her and bury him in the yard. And then they ended up together or whatever that scene was.
You're close, yeah.
Something like that.
So he goes to the airport too, and he said at this time, Harry is married to someone else.
Helen.
Which I think after that happened, they allude to the Giants game where he's then telling his best friend that he's getting a divorce.
That's right. This is the introduction of a character named Jess, played by Bruno Kirby, who, stay tuned, is our second connection to next week when we do the Billy Crystal, Bruno Kirby movie, City Slickers. So we have, I believe, the late great. Let's see. I think Bruno Kirby passed away a couple years ago. More than that, 2006.
Yeah.
But he's talking to his friend about why he's getting a divorce and why he can no longer stand his wife.
I got some serious Rodney Dangerfield vibes off that discussion. Like, can you not fuck my wife?
Yeah.
Well, his wife left him, right?
They do.
Because she was seeing another man.
Oh, that's true. That's true. That's true. That's right. That's the end where he like followed her. But essentially, oh God, getting said that I don't love you anymore.
That's right.
That hurts deep.
That's fine.
Yeah, it hurts. I'm kidding. I'm like, wait, don't. Okay. Has it happened to me once? Yes. Did I move on? Of course. And I'm fine.
Well, I mean, I think we skipped.
Or yelling at people.
Nah, I yell at people.
We skipped one scene because I will say talking through this whole movie is impossible because it's a vignettes movie. It's a series of small scenes that tie together and they're cute and they're fun. And I'm not saying that that's bad. It's just talking about the plot is meaningless. We need to talk about scenes, right? And some excellent direction by Rob Reiner. The first scene we see where they're out, I think we have what Harry is talking about getting a divorce, and that's 5 years later again, right? And that this is when he runs into her at like a bookstore, and she's standing in the help section, right? And you see things like crisis and sex and morality. Like whoever was setting this scene had a whole lot of fun. She's holding a book called Smart Women. I'm like looking at my notes as we're talking because otherwise I'd never remember this stuff. But she's talking to her best friend, the whole world, RIP, the late, great Carrie Fisher.
I love Carrie Fisher.
Yeah, Princess Leia's in this movie. Looking young, looking good. But on the books in front of her, you have things like Crisis, Cold Feet, What to Do When Your Man Doesn't Love You. Sally's holding a book called Smart Women, and she's looking at Harry, kind of checking her out, reading a book called Men and Women Relations. It's really good. It's fun. Making life right when it feels all wrong. Like, I don't know. It's good stuff. And they're just picking up books in Shakespeare's books, which no longer exist in New York. But
really?
Yeah. They go to dinner together, or at least coffee together, and we get caught up on the previous 5 years. You know, Sally breaks up with Joe because she wants a family, like you mentioned. Harry gets left for another man. They take a walk to pursue their friendship, and they decide to go to dinner later on, right? And this is when we kind of cut to the first of two New Year's Eve scenes.
Because one happens then and one happens at the end, essentially.
Right.
Yeah, so you get a comparison of the people that she's with, so to speak.
I will also say something around here which I really enjoy is just the whole men versus women thing, how they eat, how they think. It's so 1980s and 90s. Like when they had their first dinner together and he's ordering just like a burger and fries and she's asking to special order everything, right? And she's this poor... like this poor put upon waitress just listening to this woman asking to put this on the side and no tomato and like onions here and this sauce. And the woman is just like, it is the end of a 12-hour shift and I'm going to spit in everything. Like, yes. And he's just like,
Sally reminds me a bit of me with that. Like I, certain things I like and don't. Hopefully Sally's a good tipper.
No, she does everything by percentage, as you saw in that first diner, you know? So
that's right.
He's adequate. I just want to say, like, Billy Crystal, really, they aged him really well throughout the movie. Sally looked about the same throughout the movie.
But I didn't even notice, so I guess good for them.
Yeah. But no, I honestly, a lot of these scenes work because of Billy and his, like, comedic ability and just dialogue and stuff, and the writing, too, and stuff. But a lot of it, Billy's caring. He actually, that was the first... Yeah, and I remember I wrote this down. That movie is the first time I heard an Ethiopian. Like, for real. He's like, we went to Ethiopian restaurant. He's like, wow, they have food? And I'm like, yo, that's hilarious. I'm Ethiopian, so to speak. So, and I just sit there and chuckle, and I think about it like no one else could. Like, Tom Hanks couldn't say that. Matthew McConaughey couldn't say that. And me laugh like Billy.
Oh, yeah, Billy Crystal's good.
But... Wait, so let's see. They're becoming friends as they reacquaint with each other.
Is that... That's right. And like, this is the scene where we get them like, oh, sorry. I was going to say, Matthew Perry from Friends. If he said that, it would have sounded racist.
Yep. Yep.
Could they? Do they even have food?
Oh, makes you want to punch his face. Very punchable face.
It's jokes white people shouldn't make.
It's all about delivery.
It's the whole Christmas song. Do they know it's Christmas? And you're just like, guys, there's a famine. Stop singing. Give them food. That Band-Aid song has always bothered me. Anyway. Well,
that was the point. They're raising money for food, but the lyrics are so dumb.
Then we have like Bono just busting out and you're just like, no, guys, no.
Yes, they know it's Christmas time. Ethiopia is the oldest Christian country on earth. They know it's Christmas.
Actually, Ethiopian Christmas is tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So Orthodox Christmas. So, yeah.
For those of you listening for fun historical facts, haven't looked up the Ethiopian buried churches, they're some of the coolest things on the planet. Anyway, so around here, this is when they, like you said, they start becoming friends. We start having a lot of walk-in talks. We start having them call each other while they're like in bed, right? And this
we have the pecan pie.
Yeah,
pecan pie.
And this is where we get the kind of iconic orgasm in a diner scene, when they're having a discussion about whether women fake orgasms or not, and Billy Crystal saying he can tell whether or not a woman's having it. Which again, it's if you know this movie at all, you know the scene. If you've heard of this movie, and then you have the little old lady saying, "Oh, I'll have what she's having." What you don't realize is that this scene is like 4.5 minutes long.
Of her just moaning.
And it's great. I mean, it's really funny. Because the scene before is Bruno Kirby and him at the batting cages. Because, again, it's a 90s man's movie. So you're talking about baseball.
Batting cages. I haven't been one of those in a while.
That's true.
Well, what's something I notice in all rom-coms is that the group of guys, they're always doing something athletic together. Baseball. Failure to launch, they did like paintball and mountain climbing and things like that. They played baseball and power walk.
Well, and I will say, I mean, the power walking thing is like a 90s joke. You might as well have Bill Clinton in it. But they do this very well in the movie we'll do next week, where in City Slickers, Daniel Stern has this great, or maybe it is Bruno Kirby, but he has this discussion where he's like, look, me and my father weren't close, but we could talk about baseball. And that's a way, like, and again, it's a very, you know, this is a boomer movie starring boomer people talking about like how they don't really have a relationship with their parents. And so they're using sports as kind of a metaphor, right? And so we have two men who don't have the ability to converse. And again, I'm talking with two of my buddies. The first thing we do before we record is hang out for an hour and just talk, because that's what we do. We get along. But you're right. Here in this sense, Bruno Kirby and him are just kind of in a batting cage playing baseball. And what's interesting is Crystal is left-handed, Kirby is right-handed. So that means as they're playing, they're back-to-back, so they don't even have to look at each other while they're talking about these emotional things. And this is building up to the first New Year's Eve scene. But like the whole point of it is Bruno Kirby does not believe they can just be friends. And Billy Crystal saying it's great to have her as a friend. But then we get to this New Year's Eve scene, which is the next scene, and there's just the mood strikes them right, and they have kind of a New Year's Eve kind of peck, not really a kiss-kiss, but a peck. But you can tell just for half a second that it almost happens, right? And that's kind of what the relationship is.
Yeah.
And this is when we get the second or third or whatever it is. This is when we get another old people talking scene. Because again, they're building up to the point where A, we have to hide the seams of this movie, but B, they're about to jump ahead and no relationship happens the way you predicted happening.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Curious, how did you meet Candace?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, dude, I was incompetent. we were both in marching band together, and this is my second year. Right. And it was her freshman year. We're only like 3 months apart in age, but we're on the opposite sides of that threshold. My birthday's in, you know, in August, and hers is in November. So we're 3 months apart, both born in 85. but it's just we're that kind, like we're that age of different. So she being skilled and professional at, well, vaguely professional at playing music, I was in marching band, and she was in the same section as mine, and she was just better. So I ended up being the alternate for either her and the girl next to her. If the president is unable to fulfill their duties, I was the second to replace him. And she flat out rejected me at first. And, you know, so for whatever that week was, that 10 days of band camp, I was kind of dating someone else. But that didn't really work. I mean, it was a, I mean, it's a summer relationship. It doesn't work.
It was a relationship out of spite and a summer fling. I get it.
Exactly. And so she asked me out, or we went out like 3 days after my birthday. And we've been together since. So that means we've been dating for 18 years, 2004, August, 2004. But, you know, it is just one of those things. And again, our relationship has changed a lot in those 18 years, but that's kind of what, how this all works out. How about you?
Oh, I was an asshole, believe it or not. I thought I knew it all and stuff. So I was bartending a wedding, mind you. Savannah, it was open bar. Savannah and her group of friends were just coming and stuff to getting free drinks and things. And then we had keggers at this wedding, which, you know, I just, the father of the bride prayed for it and stuff. And Savannah came over a couple of times and she looked very familiar. And I'm like, hey, do we have a class together? She's like, mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Nothing about it. And then I watched her. Everyone was doing keg stands. The bride and groom did a group keg stand together. It was sweet. It was nice. It's a wedding.
Remember when you could do keg stands? I don't think I could even
ever do a keg stand. You needed 8 people to get me. And Savannah did it, but she doesn't drink beer, so she did it with apple cider, like Angry Orchard. And
sure.
Yo. And so after the wedding, after we cleaned up and stuff, I went up to her and I was just like, "Hey." And the reason I said, "Hey, do you have a Facebook?" The reason why I said Facebook and not her number, because like I'm a man who's been rejected many times. And when I asked for a number, they was like, oh, I have an email, or oh, I have Facebook or Instagram. So I was just like, hey, let me do it before she does it to me.
Sure.
And, you know, we talked and things like that. And then we started dating when I asked her to be my girlfriend when I graduated from college. And then I think like 3 months later, I was typing my, like proofreading my resume for work and stuff like that. And I asked her if she can proofread it to me, for me. And I was gonna send her the email, but I noticed like her email was already auto-populated on my laptop. I'm like, that's weird. I was like, I have your email saved. And she was like, oh my God, I've been meaning to tell this. She's like, we had a class together. And I'm like, oh shit. So what turns out would happen, so there was some business communication class that we had took, and I took it upon myself to be group leader. So I was one that everyone got like the presentations I marked or whatever and presented. And she had given me her section, and I was like, well, this is all wrong, and just did everything, like reworded everything and did everything. But lo and behold, me being me, and her being her, she actually got the work proofread by the professor and said everything was fine. So I basically corrected the professor. And I presented it, and he was like, you dumb fuck, what is up with this and stuff? But she was invisible to me because she was dating somebody else at the time. And yeah, we've been out together ever since.
That's cute.
6 years.
Yeah, that's cute. And again, the thing about all of this is they play with that idea throughout the whole movie. Because we don't get just their relationship story. We get several failed relationships. That's kind of... No. That's why it's interesting. No. And of course, you know, interested in such things. It's cute.
Yeah.
You know.
So I guess at the point of this movie, let's see, Harry is divorced. Sally is single, but kind of sing some...
I think we're at the point now where they try to hook up their friends on a double date.
Right, 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 right.
This is where Bruno Kirby is supposed to be dating Meg Ryan, and Billy Crystal is supposed to be dating Carrie Fisher. But the two of them don't hit it off. No. It's Carrie Fisher hits it off with Bruno Kirby.
By saying one of his quotes from a column that he did, which was like,
and this is where it gets the most middle-class white person. Why, you write for The New Yorker? And this is something we saw in, like, Sleepless in Seattle, too, where they're just, like, all, like, you know, the whole publishing industry, and you've got mail, you're just like, oh, this is just a fantasy for, like, middle-class, like, educated New Yorkers, Chicago, like, oh, we're in publishing? My goodness, did you read The Economist yesterday? But it was nothing compared to The Atlantic or The New Yorker. And you're just like, guys, we are eating like steak and drinking bad 90s wine. Can you help us out at all? Can you do anything?
But they hit it really quick, like seconds. Like they went home together that night.
Oh, dude, and then don't we smash cut to But then we smash cut to another couple. And then, like, 4 months later, they're buying him a housewarming gift at the Sharper Image. 1990, like, Sharper Image. And I love it. I missed gadget stores. I worked at a Brookstone for a year. I love that shit.
That's what I do. When I'm aimlessly just bored, I go to Amazon, I look at gadgets. And they don't have cool gadgets. Like they used to have with those, like a pen that is a GPS tracker, like some spy shit. You know what I mean? They don't got that anymore.
When I was at a mall, I always went to the gadget stores and the nonsense stores. And when I wasn't at a mall, it was always movies and music stores, right? Because you just want to look at a million things that you want, end up leaving with one of them, and that's it. Like I went to flip through 200 movies and 3,000 songs. Pick one album and one movie, and that's just I'm with you with Amazon. I just miss the tactile nature of that stuff.
Yeah.
And that scene where they're playing with the karaoke machine, which is nonsense. Don't ever be the person in the middle of a store on a karaoke machine. I'm sorry. But when he's playing with the mini basketball hoop, the back massager, all that stuff, I'm like, yeah, that's 1990 in a mall, man. I'm sorry. I miss that shit.
I miss the mall. I know it's there, but it's not the same.
It's not the same, no.
I'm sure I'm sounding so old when I say that, because I'm sure people, you know, where malls were popping in the 70s or whatever the era was prior.
80s and 90s. It's the 80s and the 90s.
You know, when there was roller coasters in the mall and stuff. Yeah. People used to shop at malls, you know? So,
yeah. Oh, God help me. There was a place... And I believe it is in Toronto. Let's see. Am I right? If I could spell Toronto. There was a massive mall. I believe it was the biggest mall in America at the time. But like when there was like 90 stores and like 100 eating venues, and you're just like, there are six stories of commerce. Capitalism will never die. It's just like, it's the great, like, I miss that nonsense. I also miss the arcades.
Well, if you want to go to Brookstone, apparently they have one at the Atlanta airport.
Brookstone? Yep. I think they still have one at Perimeter Mall, but like, they're all small now.
And there's a video arcade at Town Center Mall too. But
really?
Yeah.
I'm a regular at Dave and Buster's for that reason.
Or for
fair Atlanta. Point, Dave and Buster's a lot bigger.
Or for our Atlanta natives, Joysticks.
Joysticks is great.
Or Battle and Brew.
Kind of. Battle and Brew is good, but it's different because it's not a lot of arcade boxes. Though I guess for Joysticks, shout out to Johnny Martinez, friend of the show. Around here is where we get the scene where, while at Sharper Image, in fact, he runs into his ex-girlfriend. Her ex-wife, excuse me. And so they go to Carrie Fisher and Bruno Kirby's housewarming, and he's really down on relationships. In fact, he kind of storms out, and there's kind of a kerfuffle over a wagon wheel coffee table.
Yeah, that you can tell there's still some baggage here.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, because he's the one who seems to be over his relationship when Sally isn't. Though the scene after this is where they hook up. And they have their very awkward, like, post-sex scene, which is kind of funny.
Yeah,
because well, no, there was a, no. So I believe it, there was a party where Sally sucked at Pictionary, and they were actually both different dates. He was dating someone that was a little younger, while she was, I guess, I believe he was a lawyer. I'm not quite sure. And that's when you have that moment where Sally catches Harry. When Harry catches Sally kissing on her dude, and he gets like a jealous face. And then when he turns around, she does the same thing with him. And basically, essentially, they're talking to their best friends, saying like, yo, what do you think of her? What do you think of him? And which, if you think about it, I mean, just exemplifies like the jealousy, or just like the will they emphasizes on the will they won't they again. And that's the next scene where she calls Harry crying because old boy decided to run away with his secretary.
Right. That's it. And her bad night leads to them hooking up for the first time. And by the way, I found it. The mall that I was looking for is called the West Edmonton Mall, just outside of Toronto. I went there on a band trip at one point. Just ignore that. It is 5.3 million square feet. It has a zoo in it. It has 800 stores and over 100 dining establishments. The West Edmonton Mall. It's overwhelming. There you go.
Still, this is current. They have all that.
It's still open. But it's in Canada, so they are 10 years behind the rest of us. That's very true. Love you, Canada. But yeah, that's what it is. They have a hot dog store.
I love poutine.
I too am a fan of poutine.
I want nothing on my gravy and cheese curds.
Oh, gravy and cheese curds. I tell you what, my heart is flowing just talking about it.
I know,
Oh man. But at this point they also have a situation, I will say it again, a very funny scene where post-coitus, he leaves first thing in the morning, right? He's like, I gotta go, I'll call you later, we'll have dinner. And then he calls Bruno Kirby and she calls Carrie Fisher while they're in bed together, and they're both on phone at the same time. Which is, again, very funny. It's a very good scene. But what we're doing is we're approaching Carrie Fisher and Bruno Kirby's wedding. Which, again, we get kind of a timetable on. It happens about a year after they meet, a year and change. And the whole time, Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan are kind of bickering. Like, they whether or not they'll get together is at this point kind of uncertain. And, in fact, they have kind of a knockdown, drag out fight at the wedding.
Yeah, because he tries to say something profound, ends up calling her a dog.
That's right.
And then things escalate. She actually hits him. I don't think I've actually provoked anyone to hitting me yet.
Oh, I have.
That, ooh. I mean,
it's happened. So we're good. I talk a lot. Talk a lot, yeah.
Oh God, that's so funny. But yes, I think I've been there before. Yeah. Though it has been a while. I don't often like to get hit. Anyway, so I mean, the end of this is not even a will they, won't they? The last 12 minutes is like, why haven't you yet? Because after the fight, they're kind of both waiting for each other to call each other back. Billy Crystal calls first, but she doesn't answer at first. And they're trying to end up with each other at New Year's Eve, right? And she comes with another date. He's like, Bruno Kirby is with Carrie Fisher. And Billy Crystal decides not to go. So he does what any crazy person would do, is walk down darkened streets of Manhattan in the middle of the night.
I think it's just contemplating himself. He was like, this is what I want.
Well, but also, like, there's no one else on the street on New Year's Eve, which is insane. I'm sure there's drunk people everywhere. Like, everywhere. But anyway, so what's going on with all of this in the end? Well, he decides to, you know, kind of classic 90s trope, run in at the last moment to try to show up on New Year's Eve. But it, like, doesn't kind of really work out until the very end.
He professes his love to her.
What's up?
Oh, can you hear me?
Yeah, sorry. No, what I mean is that he kicks his feet. He kind of stalls around. Her date, like, is a bore. She's not really interested into him. But it's really, like, again, wait till the last moment. It's very rom-com-y, right?
Go ahead. Sorry. Oh, my bad. Sorry, I just don't know when to jump in. It's like double dutch. You know, like, ah. No.
Oh, sure.
When he shows up, she says, I'm not going to be your consolation prize. Maybe she's not as insecure as she was before, like having a total meltdown over her ex getting married.
Yeah.
And that's when Billy Crystal finally can speak coherently and wins her over.
Yeah. And you also got to think about, like, at this point in this movie, or just like if you follow her plan, Harry has been hurt before, you know what I mean? Through his divorce. And Sally has always teetered of, like, will she get married, not she get married in the relationship. And so after homeboy fucked her over, like Matt said, he got married, she's been trying to protect herself. And when Harry, as soon as Harry essentially called her a dog or just said that you just needed to have a good, you know, because that's what you needed when you were in a time of need, you know, she was protecting herself essentially. And like most relationships that I know, what Harry did was, when he was, what Matt said, he articulated his love to her, essentially just saying, I love you. And then went through that very beautiful speech. You know, it was like, somebody, I love you, that you get cold when it's 71 degrees and you take like 55 minutes to order a sandwich. You know, like that to me, when you think of rom-com, that's why this is my favorite movie. Because of Billy Crystal, and because you have moments like this. Like, I don't want a fucking scene in the rain, you know, they just drizzling down, you know. I don't want him catching a cab. I think him running was pretty good. You know, this was just very something simple, which, you know, played with the theme of the movie.
Sure. Well, and it does it, not only it does it well, because it does do it well, of course, but there's also, like you kind of alluded to, there's something about him, you know, bad Tom Cruise running that makes it seem more urgent. And again, when I say, like, it went badly at first, you have the bad relationship kind of falling apart. But if the movie is 93 minutes with credits, like 3 minutes of them are credits, and he shows up with like 17 seconds left of the movie, right? Like, it really, like, it ends very quickly. It's a New Year's Eve party. He gives that little speech like you alluded to, and then they embrace, and that's the movie, ladies and gentlemen. You know, she's in like a ball gown. He's dressed like I just imagine he always dresses. It's great.
I'm glad you mentioned Tom Cruise, and that just popped in my head why I like this movie so much. Because, and this might be shallow what I'm about to say, but Billy Crystal, he's an average looking guy.
Yes.
Failure to Launch had Matthew McConaughey. We had this stream of just hunky Twilight looking motherfuckers. And then, because this movie has an average guy going with a very attractive girl, and I'm like, hell yeah, I like this because this is factual.
Well, and I will say too, I don't know how to put it other than movies nowadays are, like, you don't, A, we don't make movies like this. I know I've said this before this month, but, like, you don't have rom-coms like this anymore, where you have real actors and actresses doing real things with real scripts. It's all Lifetime shit or Netflix shit. And, you know, I'm charmed by the fact that both of them, actually all four of the actors we talked about, are really good actors. And this is made by a real director and a real scriptwriter. But also the problem is now with Lifetime movies, they're all models. They're not actors. They're just people who look very good. And they're beautiful people. But Billy Crystal's just kind of a nebbishy Jewish dude. And, I mean, she's Meg Ryan. She'll always be Meg Ryan. But these are much more attainable people than, like, these kind of vapid models that fill these Netflix movies. And I think that makes it more endearing.
Billy Crystal's also funny. That can compensate for the nebbish angle.
Well, I mean, it's not, but I mean, like, it's the, I joke elsewhere, but like, he could, like, if Seinfeld could act, this is almost a Seinfeld character. Like, he just complains. It's a lot of what's the deal with dating. The nebbishy part is that he's just kind of elbowy and awkward, and he's not charming, but he's an excellent actor, and he is very funny throughout this because he's Billy freaking Crystal. That's what he does. But I feel like we've done this movie quite well, this justice. Are there any final thoughts? I'll start with Meyer, our occasional guest. Nor, what do you have final thoughts as our expert in this flick?
This was a simple movie. It's easy to watch, but you do have to pay attention. The theme that I kept saying over and over again is that you feel the emotions from the characters, from the movie, from the directing, from the writing, you know, all put together, because it makes sense too. They don't force the love. They don't force the relationship, which I appreciate, because sometimes, like, we expect in these movies, especially when the will they won't they, that, oh, okay, they're going to get together because that's, you know, how it is. But by forming a friendship prior to the movie, you actually care about each aspect of the relationship between Harry and Sally and their adventures they have together over this, like, this 20 period. And having the couples come in between and talking about their love and how complicated it was gave us hope in between times that, hey, they're going to get together because love ain't easy, essentially, you know, and it comes in different sizes and forms. And, you know, just overall, things will work out if they're supposed to work out.
Matt, what do you think?
I thought it was a pretty good movie. Billy Crystal's funny.
Succinct as always. Hey, man, if you want to read his review.
I've been looking, as we're like talking, I'm looking at stuff. So yeah,
you know, his review on his website will be 1600 words. His review now is meh, period.
Funny.
I will say I like this movie a lot. This is probably my favorite of the month. I like Rob Reiner as a director. He knows when to make the pauses to make jokes work. This movie is funny, not just because Crystal's funny and Meg Ryan are funny and everyone in it is funny and the script is good, but it's edited and filmed in a way that makes it nice, tight, and clean. I know, Matt, you, me, and Nora view movies very differently. I'm someone who looks at the technical stuff. I'm someone who looks at everything differently. The filming, the acting, the direction, the sound, everything. And I come together with like a net score. Nor, you generally are, you know, Roger Ebert, the feeling of the masses. Is this something that I'd like to watch? Period. You have a very kind of visceral, emotional response to things. And, you know, a lot of your reviews start with, yo, it's blank, because it's a gut reaction. Matt, you generally want to find a world that you can live in. The movie might be bad, but if it creates an interesting space, that's the kind of movie that you like. I think it appeals more to all three of us because it does create a version of New York. It does create a world of relationships that fail and end. It does create a kind of, if I caught this on TV when it was just broadcasting, it's kind of an ass magnet. I just sit and watch it because everyone in it's charming. But the second they cut to the old people, I know it's the end of an act. I can move on if I want to, or I can sit for another act. That part of it is very you, Nor, and I get it. And then for me, I'd say technically, it's almost perfect. There's some plot issues, maybe. There's some character stuff that I don't care for, but it's in, it's given up in response to the fact we want to keep this a night tight 90 minutes. And it is a night tight 90 minute movie, which again, no one can make anymore because everything has to be 2.5 hours, but it keeps it funny. If any of these scenes were lengthened by a minute, it loses its timing. And because of that, it is a nice tight movie I could rewatch. So I would give this my thumbs up because it fulfills the trifecta of what we look for in general here, but also that shows us a universally kind of beloved movie. There's things that we could poke at it. Women generally have about a third the lines to maybe 60% of the lines. There is not a black person to be found in this movie, which the waitress takes place in New York.
The waitress at the first right. Night. Trust the not, diner. I count these things.
But I mean, like
a waitress.
I, but again, like, it's Nora Ephron and Rob Reiner. So, like, when it's Christmas, Christmas fills the screen. Right. When it's not, it's just, it's summer, and he's wearing a, like, a baseball t-shirt. I don't know. I like this movie. I do. Final blows, gentlemen. All right. Before I give the end, Nora, do you have any thing you want to plug before we leave?
Oh, yes. Please check out my Opium movies and the rest of the podcast that we've done together, specifically the episodes with me. I'm kidding. They're all great. Check out Nick in his... Actually, I'll tee this up for Nick, what you got going on with your live shows. You're on mute. I'm trying to
tell you. I am, but I wanted to see how that sentence was going to go.
I thought you would go again. It's like, oh,
yeah. No. So check me out on Cineprov. We are back live now. As I mentioned before, of course, we're ending our Nora Ephron month because, of course, February is ending. Next week, we're going to City Slickers. But I bring that up because our February show happened last week. But our March show is coming out. We haven't picked the title yet, but March will represent the first show. How do I even put this? March 2020 was the first show we had to cancel because of COVID. It's our third anniversary back. Our third anniversary show from COVID. Matt, do you have anything you want to plug?
Well, hopefully by the time this airs, my new book, Serpent Sword, the second Battle for the Wastelands book, will be out. It's like the Dark Tower meets Game of Thrones.
Oh, shit.
Good. It'll be available on Amazon as an ebook or probably a hard copy, correct?
Yeah, you're probably going to be Amazon exclusive at least for a while. The print books, you can start finding a lot of retailers because I use expanded distribution. But yeah, that hopefully won't be any crises between now and then. Fingers crossed.
Very good. So thanks, guys. Thanks for all you do, Nora, Matt. And thanks for you, my audience members, for subscribing, writing us reviews, and keep writing us our reviews. Like I said, as we're speaking at the end of February, we're rapidly ending our season. Our season ends in June. And then we will start our 10th year doing this show. So we appreciate you sharing us and reviewing us to keep us on everyone's mind and keep us on the charts around the world. Thanks, everyone.